Welcome to the Spirit Aligned Leadership Program, Legacy Leader Podcast. Today, we are speaking with Circle 2 Legacy Leader, Kathy Sanchez, from San Ildefonso Pueblo, from an interview with Gudgy Cook on March 31st, 2021.
I'll go ahead and start by introducing my centering table. And before me, I have a bowl of water. So water is present here with me as I speak truth to fire. And of course, the candle is lit for all the cultures of the world to be recognized as we speak. And then my son made us a pottery of woman with children on her back. So that's present to also witness. And then the evergreens. And so we'll go ahead and say it in Tewa. Umbia kinyandi nanori wikipoaba good dagaturi. Bai kipo hichampo nano e sigimawa ba etu amari hana bipindwe mawa sit da in the mengwa ba sit da ni hawari hui. Erawa weka mawa hawa de keke na mini ho. Bing ho bombiri wira limuniri. Thank you. Good day. So I want to start by saying that my homeland is Ohoge Oinge, where the water cuts through. Our pueblo, also referred to as San Ildefonso Pueblo, is presently located in northern New Mexico. We speak the Tewa language, and as do five other sovereign nations in this area. The knowingness I have for my of my ancestral homelands begins with the Bear's Ears story and the Colorado Plateau, the present-day Four Corners region comprising of southeastern Utah, northeastern Arizona, northwestern New Mexico, and the southwestern Colorado areas. Our ancient peoples of the Bear's Ear area of the Colorado Plateau are the forerunners of our contemporary Pueblo peoples. I just wanted to acknowledge that our range is very massively, and as time has taken our lands away, we're now in the northern New Mexico. Thus, in my Tewa language, I will introduce myself. Wengwo povia omu, navi ya okwa pep. Pimpo vianamo, and Navisaya potin nanamo. Navisaya quio povica. I ni saya in akiribos, sawe paindimo. And they are all my matriarchal lineage. They are all potters, so they're all spirit women of clay. And they guided me with a strong heart to center on our principles.
What have been some major happenings in your life's journey that have inspired your search for healthy life?
I would say the major turning points for me has been that I could have died, but I didn't. And so one of them was a car accident when we were teenagers. We had rolled over five times in a station wagon. And we all survived with minor scratches. And I think I had gone under the dashboard because I could have been burnt by the car acid, but that was just minor scratches there. And then the other time that I could have died, but I didn't, was we were all kids swimming in the river. And there were some adults further down the stream, and they pulled me up by my hair as I was floating past them. And so, and then I was just thinking, why? And then another time was that I could hear the bullet pass my head. I could hear the sound. I could have been dead with that shot too, but I wasn't. So that led to questioning was, why was I spared? What needs to still be done in my life journey? And so with that started a lot of the soul searching that I had done.
What wisdom would you like to share with the inspired futuristic thinkers from your community?
I think my soul searching has taken me to really look at the deep roots that have guided me, and having my values for life being placed by working with clay. So really attached to Mother Earth, and then respectfulness of receiving gifts from Mother Earth, and then also then sharing those gifts with others. And so out of that model came the two world harmony model of being in two different ways of thinking. And like I mentioned earlier, our Pueblo had a range from the mountains all the way down to the Rio Grande River. And the mountain range, there was where the secrecy was happening in our sacred mountains. And come to find out that what we were feeling and what was happening and our men going up there to work and coming down was all about the wartime efforts to keep the domination alive by winning, by wanting to dominate the world in creating the first atomic bombs that were used to kill innocent people in not just one, but two big major Japanese cities. And so that was like a soul wounding that happened to our men and to our community and to our families and also to Mother Earth, the waters, the animals. And we in our pueblos were noticing signs that things weren't right. We weren't able to breathe. Things were just so crazy. So that was like in the 1950s when I was born. And so I was always questioning a lot of why was this happening? Why don't they tell us? Or why are we having to now give births in a military hospital as opposed to home births that we were used to or that were centering around family? And so the two world butterfly model helped me to figure out the contradictions and how to manage them of thinking in my native way of knowing stuff. And then also in the Euro-American way of the schooling systems that we were in BIA day schools and what they had wanted us to become and our struggle to hold on to our language, our hold on to our practices. And so that fear was very much already in our cellular memory because the genocide that had happened with the Euro-Americans coming onto the Americas and what that meant. And I'm so very grateful that my great-grandmother was still alive and she lived to be 95 and beyond. And she would share stories about the fear of the Native communities moving, that the white people are coming and that they leave death and destruction. They don't spare women or children. And so I think the fear-based mentality was also then used against us to keep us from not reaching out for support and help from all other members of the sovereign nations that we find around here, even to this day. And so I'm glad that the Circle of Grandmothers that had come together for Te Huang United has really supported each other to find a safe place to offer prayers, offer support, and to analyze what is happening to our children.
Yes, in thinking, Elder Kathy, about futuristic thinkers, young women who have created, with your guidance, Te Huang Women United, what are the elements of their life cycle from birth to mortuary rites, the re-ritualization of the life cycle? How has Te Huang Women United, under your guidance and the guidance of the Circle of Grandmothers, moved against the violence, the fear, these elements that affect your daily life?
I think what was so inspirational for me was how to make choices of the questioning, that we have that power within us, and young people do, to question and to be supported in how they seek out their the means to inform themselves. And it's not like, be quiet, don't ask those things. But it's like, it's that everyday expression of your daily relational activity with all aspects of being that is found within your sphere of influence. So that if they're walking down a path, that journey might take them past trees. So greet the trees and say, thank you for being here, for offering me shade and fruit. And I will make sure that you have water. I'll keep your water source safe. Or if you're walking down and then you see the river flowing and then the rocks are there, and you thank the rocks for being there. They're stepping stones. They have made the path of the water flow meander. And so that is, so the consciousness, I guess, is what I'm saying, is that you become consciously aware of your presence and your surroundings. And if you think in morning prayers from asking for guidance to have a good day, then you're centering, like I did at the beginning, with the mind, the heart, and the spirit around water. And water guides us in our dream space and in our journeys. And even though we might get off the beaten path as young people, it's okay to get back up and say, oh, okay, I can do better. I'm going to try. Forgive me, but I'm going to try, you know, so that it's like you're forgiving yourself for learning from your experiences. If that experience weren't there, you wouldn't be learning something from it, even though you think it was a bad choice. But then something good will come of it if you learn from that happening. Just like that bullet going by my head, you know, it's like, whoa, what did that mean, you know? And so why was I spared? Why are our children getting in trouble? But it might not be trouble to them. They were testing something, doing something, and maybe that was a bump on the road that they need to learn from, adjust from, and question, why did that happen? Or it wasn't me. Why did they think it was me and stuff? So yeah, the wisdom to share that they have it within themselves. They have their minds, they have their hearts, they have their spirit, and they have their ancestors that are there in the asking them to help you in your times of troubles, or even if not in trouble, to say, thank you, ancestors, for thinking of me and my world, because now I can also think about the future children and how, what kind of world I will want for them. And once you have your thoughts, they are then making that infinity loop that the butterfly model is based on. The two world harmony is that you're informing the consciousness of time and space. And then they then inform the time and space into the future. So you're carrying forward the energy of presence, of existence, in a good way, in a heart-centered way. And just a reminder that we are global families throughout the whole of Mother Earth. And that means that even though our children might be away in college, or even children that are halfway in another country, that the grandmothers from there and here and everywhere are praying together to the cosmos to guide and protect all children, all places, all people. And so we're all together in this. And each one is like a little sand pebble on a beach. All those little tiny pebbles make the whole land. There, and even as trees die and they fall to the ground, they still are nurturing the soil and they are giving life again. And so I guess in futuristic thinking is that energy of our soulfulness, energy of Mother Earth, energy of matter together is a very infinity existing existence. So that it's a holistic infinity presence already. Learn to understand, but to respect and keep it in its holistic context. I know the tendency is to want to, oh, I want to know about that. So they cut it, take it apart, analyze it. And then it's like, oh. And then, you know, then the saying goes, well, I learned that in chemistry and biology. Now I need neurosciences to help me understand how that relates to it when it comes into my body, you know? So it's like a constant, I would say a respectfulness that needs to be shared and honor it and have it perpetually be there for children and all people. I think another thought that comes in is the culture of violence. I need to mention that because when we talk about our native ways of knowing and being with Mother Earth in pottery and clay and farming and connecting, that there is also the dichotomization, the separating, the isolating of a culture of violence, that they want to control what they want to know or they know, and so that they can then be the one that is making things happen. And it comes with making things happen if they also are making the economy not be the ecosystemic way, but the economics of money, mm-hmm. capitalism. So with that comes a culture that wants to be in the power to say what you do or what you don't do, or whether you are allowed to even be human, that they think within the culture of violence, the they is whoever is so consumed with their physicalness of their presence as opposed to their soulfulness of their presence. And so I think we have to be consciously aware when we come into contact with that which our gut tells us, nah, that doesn't seem right. Why would you want to hurt that person? Or why would they want to kill all it, or do this thing, the things that are happening now? And the, I guess, the comfort or the guidance that we need to give our younger generation is they know something is not right, that they know in that they want to be loving, caring, and sharing, but the, how would I say, the intolerance that they're feeling of the violence is mounting up, that they lose their strength in the struggle, as opposed to how do they recharge themselves? Who do they need in order to tell them you're okay, you're doing good, drink some water, or go into the river and just ask the spirits in the water to bless them, support them, cleanse them, let them cry, let them get their strength. That all the elements that are visible in their path have a goodness to them, and they need to honor that so that reciprocity can happen.
You mentioned the three times in your early life where you almost died, and that you talk about time and space and the infinity model. How did those episodes, those incidents, inform your unraveling and presentation of developing the infinity model?
I think because our Pueblo is located, Los Alamos National Laboratory flopped into our sacred mountains. So the scientists were always intriguing for me, because they would put out things and then I would question it by bringing it into my native thinking. And then how does that make sense or doesn't? So that managing the contradictions I'm hearing is what the model is saying, that we have it within ourselves to really be the experts of our knowingness, our lived experiences. And then also, if we want to have a real mutual dialogical process happening, then we need to be able to also inform the Euro-American ways that what we know and what we have been guided by through ancestral teachings is full capacity, expertise, and they're of equal value, but they need to be in dialogue so that instead of swaying our young people now, go into all the sciences and think like a scientist and do these things. Yeah, to a sense that they can then come back and unravel the hardness of just linear thinking. They want to get back into that cyclical nature and then be able to come forward in truth from the heart. And if it's truthfulness that you feel guided you in dream space or guided you to what you feel, the action, the activity you need to be involved in, then blessings to you. So the grandmothers are not the ones that are showing, this is what you need to do, this is how you should do it. And you know, it's not that, it's us sitting in support of their process of being informed. And so it's not, they don't have to know everything, but Creator and the grandmothers are very patient to say, they're going to get it. I'll let them go their way and then see, and then reward them when you see it. So that was amazing. You thought of that yourself. That was good. Thank you. And, you know, like, and then they say, yeah, I did it. You know, so in that sense, that's what I think elder wisdom is, in being there and then also directing them with different pathways. Well, maybe, have you thought about this might also be a possibility? You know, you're throwing resources to them, and then it's up to them to want to go that route or not, or they're not ready. And so, yeah, you're very patient, and you're still doing things that need to take care of their growth. And so I think the wisdom in sharing through the media has been very advanced now, but still the cautions are there. So I'm very caught up in the science technology of the radar systems, the geoengineering, the chemical polluted produced waters that are done by oil and gas companies and things. And then I just heard a teaching with a young ladies that were doing, what is fracking? What does it mean? What does it do? And they were right on. I mean, and that was like, it didn't have to be us elders that have been in the struggle so long to come and say, this is what you need. I was just so blessed. I thanked them. And I really am thankful that they're the young ones that are coming up and really there to protect and promote loving, caring ways with our relational activity with among us human beings and among our relatives of water, plant, animals, cosmos, all the ways that density of matter have come together.
Elder Kathy, could you expand on your statement of the spirit woman of clay? Can you describe the elements of such a wonderful image?
Yeah, so I was at that cross points also with, I had gotten my degrees, and then my elders, my great-grandmother, my grandparents, they were all getting older, and I had to make a choice, you know, do I want to keep going at an 8-to-5 job, or am I ready to be in my community and be able to cherish the moments with my elders, being patient and then working with the clay and they're sharing wisdom as they're kneading the clay with earth and the water, and then also gathering the materials. They offer their prayers, asking for permission to take the clay, and then also so all that. And it's not like sit down here, this is how you make pottery 101 style, you know, and stuff like that, but it was their present way of sharing themselves from the heart, that that the spirit woman of clay title came about, because it's B'Equil, Spirit Woman of Clay, that the spirit of your energy interacting with Mother Earth is key to how the final vessel relates to other people and what shape it's going to take. So sometimes you might be trying for a big old huge nice shaped pot, and then it just like and say, oh, okay, that's not what you want to be. And then you just go with a wider, flatter one or something. And then it might say, oh yeah, no, I probably should have done that shape, because we're going to need a water bowl pretty soon for our practices in the community. And then it's also amazing that the spirit also gets to be released from the clay, because your energy is there. But when a person has created vessels, they return a vessel with them by breaking it, so it's broken. And there's also another ceremony in our community where it's what gifts you're gifted with and what you have to share with others in the spirit world as well. So it takes a good, like you need maybe to make 10 wide pottery platters in order for one to really come out. But you're out of the 10 you made, the one that came out, you're offering that to the spirit world. And so in one ceremony in our plaza, the clowns, I guess the kashars, they showed that big platter that my grandmother Maria had made. They're showing it and all of you, oh, beautiful, wonderful. And then he let it go and boom. And it's like everybody was, but you know, that's giving from the heart. And so it's gone. I mean, you don't hold on to things that are of this world. You know, you give it away, you share. And they were always getting mad at my great grandmother, because people would give her things. Oh, Maria, here's this nice belt I made, or that's for you. And then the next thing you know, here comes this poor auntie or a relative, and she says, oh, I think you would really enjoy this belt, here, I'll give it to you. And so it's like, why did you do that? I said, well, they gave it to me to give. So it's like that continuous sharing and acknowledging with what you're gifting or giving away. So I think that's how I feel about the two-world butterfly model that guided me to share, in a way, all the relational activity, that it's relations that's important. I take exception to relationships, because when the Euro-Americans came, they put everything in ships. You know, they put their slaves, their human other in at the bottom in a ship, and they want to manage the helm of the ship. They want to be so I don't like it when people are relationship, that there has to be a designation of something that brings the two, or that holds two. Well, it's the fluidity of the energy of the two that is coming together in their activities of relating relatives, relations. So it's like a butterfly, I guess. I tie it with the Morbus strip. I love the Morbus strip. I learned that in about the third grade, what a Morbus strip is. And it's like, it's an infinity loop and how you cut it and what happens. And so when you actually cut, and then we did a videotape of the Morbus strip. When you cut it the second time, it actually forms a butterfly. So that's where the butterfly model comes together with the two world harmony. And then what the wings then comprise and make up the parts that is your life journey, and where those informations all come to grow that tree of peace that's your development in the middle. So then you have the fluidity to move towards goodness or to move away from the negative, but not to be isolated and not to just stand in the middle and be in balance. You have to, that fulcrum moves towards, If you need to get away to the mountains, go there. Or if you need to go to courts and be in litigation, go there. But you come back in with that, with the community side to your spiritual side. And you have a 24-hour journey with the blessing with the sun and then the return of the sun and then the night and stuff. So it's like a lot of information that I like visuals. I like to see things that are visible.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of visible elements in the Tewa world. Of those elements, I think what inspires me is the four mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Situate yourself within. Do you recall that moment at Tamaya where we stood in front of that sacred fire and that song was sung by Vicky? Such a moment is a moment I wish we could share with girls and young women.
Yeah, to really, really be centering and then and to share the whys. You know, why do we center ourselves? Why do we have four sacred mountains? What are the crystal points? What are the frequency levels that are generated? And what are the pathways that the ancestors and the spiritual, soulful side of us need? And how the visitors come. Visitors don't come into our area just with a body. They come within their spiritual dream space. And so, you know, when they follow that path, and then we have visitors come to the sacred waters that are within those spaces in your own part of the area or wherever your centering is, your base, they touch base, they touch the soulfulness, and then they go back to wherever journey they're on. And so we're conscious that, that we have to maintain and cleansing and recharging ourselves and to be connected to that. And if the technology is really interfering or they know that it's there, we have to guard and protect that in a way that that honors the longevity of that energy for goodness. Everybody has their purposefulness. So the questioning that connects me back with the young is, because they're always asking, well, who am I? I come from a mixed marriage, or I don't know, you know, like, what's my purpose? And I say, well, who is your purpose? Not so much what are you going to be doing, but whose purposefulness are you in existence for?
Wow.
So, I mean, and it's a very delightful. It's not, how would I say, my age, my body, yeah, but it's not tiring. It's joyfulness. I mean, it's a happiness to see the young ones, are happiness to see. And then if you see someone struggling, you offer silent prayers in there towards them. You know, you don't have to say, what's wrong with you? What's going on? You know, like you're still present. You're acknowledging them, you're offering the prayers, you're asking ancestors of their ancestry or their place to help them also. And it's just that conscious second moment. Other message for the young is that not all is known, so don't worry. You don't have to know everything as you're going in your process and steps. Other things will be shown to you and others will come forward. And so you don't know when that presence of the other ways to be or other elements are there. But if you're conscious, then you say, oh, now I know why I was over there at that time. Or, oh, yeah, I don't know why I picked up that rock, but it sure gave me strength. And now I'll put it with my garden, or I'll put it with the water. You know, like things just are what they are. I don't know.
But you have to be available to those energies. Mm-hmm. And so many young people get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
With, I love how you said don't ask what, but ask who. Mm-hmm. Could you expand on that idea in relation to feeling stuck?
Well, it's like, if they are, what do I do? What do, you know, then it's the mind trying to really just hassle with that, solve it in your head. And then, so then you get frustrated. But if it's who, then who opens it up to all the energies that are around? So who is usually heart-centered. It's a heart-centered question. And so the who then recognizes that trees have a who. Rocks have a who, because it's energy for being visibly present.
Elder Kathy, as I listen to you and perceive the depth of spirit within your teachings, could you comment on how who you are is informed because of the, of your beautiful language?
While we were trying to document our lineage in pottery, we had our uncle had created a song, a verse of part of a corn dance to include Bovica, our great grandmother. And so the languaging was in there, but honoring her name, the naming of who she was and being with the land, with the flowers and the mountains and the blessings that come from the mountains, bringing it down to the center for the dances. But if the language were not known, but you're hearing the rhythm and you're really going with the patterning, you lose that centering that connects your different parts of your brain to your activity. So language, there's a part in the butterfly model where language has many different ways to communicate. Language in your Tewaness, language in just your body movements, language in the modalities of where it goes to connect to your other brain parts, and then how that relates to what's coming from the soulful energy inside to the outside, and it informs the outside. So your language is that which, if it's coming from a heart-centered language, your demeanor or your behavior on the outside is calming and relational. And so the language is usually tied to describing things because you're experiencing it, like the sound of water or and then the water in you. And so in languaging, they draw a picture for you from your inside relational relations with the outside. So so it's a very soulful language. And there are the dark side of things as well, even in our native way. But the language that helps that is the healing language of that soulfulness. So even though they say that, they did this to you and they did that to you and they're very mean, but the language is, you know, that I'm offering good thoughts and prayers to surround them because I love the person, or I love the beingness that is still envisioned to be for them, but I'm not judging. So very non-judgmental languaging is in the native languages because they relate to the energy that informs them from all the elements of tree, plant, rocks, water, air, cosmos, you know, you name it, that's all informing how to be in that good relational way so the fluidity can still continue. Does that make sense for language?
It's beautiful. It's very expressive. It makes me wonder For example, what is your word for the sun?
That's Tang. Tang Sedo. So Tang Sedo is the father son. So it's already a relational with the sun to Grandma Moon or to Mother Earth. I mean, you know, they all have their purposeful relationativity of interactions or reciprocity. And one thing that I take offense to in English is the word "da," "da rock," "da water," "da," you know. And so it's like they're objectifying all that which is has spirit, a purposefulness of presence, you know. So, and I know when I write something, they correct grammar. They're always correcting my grammar on leaving out things, but it's like, it's not the water. It's not the Mother Earth. You know, it's not, you know, like, oh, anyway, that's one.
That's a very critical point. It goes with that technological critique you gave earlier. And I hadn't thought of that way until this moment, Elder Kathy, how we do English language objectifies our worlds. Mm-hmm. And to live inside of that core of a word. For example, one language speaker in Canada just was asked, how would you say the word peace in her language? And she said, we are not we don't use linguistics. That's a structural approach. And she took it down, peace, to the umbilical cord, the root word for, in her language, for peace, lands on the umbilical cord that helps us to grow. The purpose inside of our mothers is for us to grow and develop. So it made perfect sense that something that continues to help us to grow and develop would be responsible for our feeling of peace. And so I wonder in your language, what the word for peace, what energies are in your word for peace? That's a more appropriate way of putting
peace.
Or the harmony, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. So it's that, I guess the core values, so that are how to be in that relationativity, like Guiwa Sengwa Byambe. They say that to us, you know, be respectful of your masculinity or your femininity, because they both live within you. And so there's that relational, well, you want to say peace, but the relationativity that exists there. And so that's peace. And then if you're talking about surrounding, it's like bisigimabi. So, I mean, they're like standard words for our core values for Tewa Women United, is that love each other, nurture each other, care for each other, you know, those type that brings peace. That's the relationativity of honoring all the presence that are visible within your sphere and having that, you give that love and it return that love. You know, so it's that lovingness though, that's there that brings that. And it's like, I struggle with our current relationativity we have with they want to stop the culture of violence, but then they say, we want to be in a non-violent way. And so they're not naming the peace, but they're naming what they don't want to be. So you have to know and name the things that are in that way to be with each other.
Well said. What are your pursuits in the future that you may be preparing yourself for, or what are you thinking next?
Well, I was not so gifted with singing and not so gifted with cooking and not so gifted with sewing. So I think that shows that I have been out there. I've been in that soul searching philosopher type mode. So now what I'm looking to is learning with my grandchildren, my great grandchildren, how to be in that activity of finding joy in the presence of that doing. And however you do it, you know, like if we make bread and we mix this and that, that came out good. Let's, you know, share, you know, that type of a happy centering back to being present in the doing simple things. I think the wisdom to share with all peoples, with all children, is that that the purposefulness for our existence has already been put in place by our ancestors. And our ancestors have dreamt of us, of what they life, the goodness they want for us, and that we have that same responsibility to dream the good things for all peoples, all life on our Mother Earth, and to give that simple love and thankfulness every day, and to be conscious that that it's okay to ask for support, to ask for help, and then also to question in a good way, so that relational activity can continue and not be about supporting that culture of violence. We can spin it on its side and not give it our energy, but we need our energy, that we have that energy that the sciences know, but that we as native to land know that that energy to do things, to be, to become and being, is the energy of love. And we need to name that lovingness, that heartfeltness that everybody has, and to recognize people from that point.